It's Tuesday, 12th of May. It's time to get your grin on with a Grincast here to discuss the world of gaming from the past week. I'm your host, Ace. Joining me are Nikki.
Hello.
Rhodes.
Hello there.
And Velt.
Hi.
We've got a bit to talk about from this past week because the Inside Xbox, obviously that'll be taking up most of our time, or at least I've timed this episode for that to be the case. Hopefully it does. But we'll start as we often do. Start from the bottom of the list. Velt, what have you been playing this past week?
That doesn't help because my name starts with a V, so I'm almost always last. What have I been playing this week? So I've been playing the wonderful Animal Crossing a lot. Good. It's a good game. Everyone else been playing Animal Crossing?
Much. I believe lots of people have been playing.
I hope so. It's all that anyone could talk about on my Twitter timeline.
I have muted certain terms on Twitter.
Is that term turnips?
I'm not saying what these terms are.
Turnips are bad. They're bad. Do not play the term turnip capitalist market games.
Oh, who's got so and so? Oh God, shut up! Sorry, go on.
I've been playing Animal Crossing. It's been joyous. Yeah, honestly. I think I was here listening to a little bit of what you guys said last week, a little bit earlier, and adjust to just be, you know, like just existing in that world during this time of indoorsness. It's very nice to kind of have that as a bit of a crutch, I guess.
Well, we're all coping with certain things going on in the world at this moment, yeah.
And so I've been playing a bit of Super Mario Maker 2 as well. Been actually making some of my own levels, which is a lot of fun. I'm not very good at that. I'm absolutely atrocious at making levels. What I have been doing though is finding influence from other games to create levels in there. So I've recreated like first levels of other Nintendo games in sort of weird mechanic versions of Mario. Like I did the first Kirby level. I don't know how.
You're gonna get taken down notices.
Yes, I mean, I was sort of, it kind of crossed my mind. I was thinking, is Nintendo going to try and take down my levels for copyright of their own IP? I don't know, it's a weird thing.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, I haven't managed to do anything. But there are loads of sort of weird stuff in Mario Maker, like people doing the Undertale theme songs, which I know are license-free, I think. But still, yeah, it's a thing. I mean, I don't know. I've been genuinely enjoying sort of Mario Maker and Animal Crossing, that sort of thing. But yeah, I think that's probably mostly what I've been doing.
Okay, Nikki, what about you?
Oh gosh, I've been playing quite a bit this last week. Obviously, more time to play games. Of which, there's the usual suspects: Azura Lane. There's an event, so of course I splashed out on all my resources to try and build the event exclusive ship, which failed, so now I have to actually do the event, which is grindy. Animal Crossing as well. We were just saying about how, you know, there's the whole turnip market. I am a slave to the turnip market. I regret every decision. I've come to the conclusion that Tom Nook is a capitalistic pig. He's a raccoon, actually. But I've also decided that in this weird headcanon, he speaks in a very thick Russian accent. So that's my envision of Tongan.
He's a tanuki.
Oh gosh.
That's what it threw it off for me, because I thought it was a raccoon, but then it sort of occurred to me that he could be a tanuki, and his name is Tom Nook, as in Tom Nuki. And I was like, oh,
he's still a capitalistic pig.
it doesn't change. He's nicer in this one, apparently. They changed it so that he was a bit nicer. And not as landlordy.
Yeah, but I've technically beaten, in massive air quotations, finished Animal Crossing. For those who don't know, the whole sort of loop is to get a certain someone to visit your island. As soon as you get that, credits roll. at that point, you're technically done with the game, but then it's like, hey, here's the tools to landscape your island, and you realize that you've just entered the second level of hell. Save me. Away from Animal Crossing, though, getting ready for Halo 2, which is dropping like at 4 a.m. tomorrow because of stupid time zones. So I've been playing through, finished up Combat Evolved, a second playthrough of that in co-op, and started a co-op playthrough of Halo Reach. So looking forward to playing Halo 2 tomorrow evening, I suppose. Sticking with shooters, Destiny 2, I decided at the very last minute it'd be a great idea to jump into the Guardian Games event, because Titans were actually winning at something for once, and having been a Titan for 6 years, I was like, I should probably do something. So I helped, threw some points in, unlocked the code that lets me buy a physical thing that comes with like a scarf and a pin badge, because I am, for a better use of the words, an absolute tart when it comes to Destiny. Bungie, I love you. And then I started playing Battlefield 5. I had a massive urge to play Battlefield. Haven't played in years. Barely played 1. Haven't touched 5. I jumped into 5 over the weekend. And you know what? It's bloody good. It's amazing. The problem is, though, I really like building fortifications. Wait a minute. Building in a shooter? Oh, dear. That sounds like something else. But no, it's really good. I'm enjoying it. I'm playing as the medic, so I'm always like quite high on the scoreboard, because all I'm doing is running around healing people, reviving people, occasionally shooting someone. It's great. I can get good points and level up and not really have to kill people. It's like the pacifist run of online FPSs.
That would be great if you could just do a pacifist run of like Call of Duty and win. You're just like, I'm not killing anyone and I'm having fun doing it.
That would be incredible. Then some more Exit the Gungeon. My review, my thoughts of Exit the Gungeon will be live on the site in the coming days. The final stage is approving. Spoilers, it's good. If you liked Enter the Gungeon, you'll probably like Exit the Gungeon. It is a spin-off, it is a slightly different take. But considering it is nearly half the price, you can't go wrong. Elsewhere, XCOM Chimera Squad, I finally managed to take down the first of the... There's kind of like three big groups you need to take down. I took down the first one. That final mission for them took me 2 hours, and I was subject to the Lord of RNG. There was no way I could be prepared for it, because it's XCOM. But literally, I had to do a flawless maneuver with good RNG, and I managed to get it after like the 7th restart. I was just like, yes. And then it was just keeping everyone alive. I finished the mission with like 3 people unconscious. They didn't die, so that's fine. I still win. They just need some time to rest. And a little bit more Neo Tokyo, keeping with my weird vibe of going back to games from years and years ago, because as I said before, I'm trying to make a map for it. Slow and steady progress, but I think we're getting there. It's gone from being a rooftop to now oil rig.
I was about to ask, is it going to be the first level of Kirby?
No, because I'm not too sure how the first level of Kirby would work in an FPS map, but hey, let's find out.
I'm not sure how the first level of Kirby works when you can't inhale and exhale your enemies, but, you know.
Kirby game ever. You just get like 5 steps and then you just lost for breath.
That's what he does.
And finally, the final game I played this week, which I've saved for last because it's a proper blast from the past, I played some Garry's Mod.
Oh.
I thought that'd be you.
Jesus. Why?
Because it's just random fun. It was good to just sort of mess about in it. Decided with a friend to essentially just set up a ramp and see who could, for just making and grabbing random vehicles, who could jump the furthest. And it was hilarious. We had ridiculous pyrotechnics going on, and then we may have suspended a few anime characters from the ceiling, but that's a different subject altogether, I guess. It was just weird and hilarious, and I forgot how much fun it is to just run around as completely like the most unfitting character to what you're doing. I was running around as Rory Mercury from the Gate anime. So just imagine a gothic Lolita driving cars. That was me. It was great.
Is they're doing a Garry's Mod 2, right?
I have no idea. I'm literally out of touch with Garry's Mod for so long. And my friend was like, should we play Garry's Mod? I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's jump back a few years. I know.
Yeah, I'm sure he announced it on Twitter and everyone was just like, but why does it need a 2? Everything is in the 1.
Yeah, you just update it if you're going to add another update. It's like a Minecraft 2, isn't it? We don't need a Minecraft 2.
Well,
unless, just get more stuff on the Minecraft game.
Unless it's maybe just a move over to the Source 2. Or maybe it's an entirely new engine.
That's a fair point.
I don't know, actually. I'm going to have a look into that. I didn't even know it was a thing. But that is everything I've played this week.
There was a Game Green community game night with Gary's mod the other day. Apparently it was mad. You're not the only one who jumped back in time this past week. Rhodes, what about yourself?
Well, on the topic of jumping back in time, I have been delving into the archives of the horrid list of Steam games I've not played over the years, and I played through two over the weekend. There was two I finished. There was Hydrophobia Prophecy, which I have already written something about. My thoughts on that are passionate and clear. But the second one was Penumbra Overture by Frictional Games, who made Amnesia. So for anyone who... Well, most people will know Amnesia at this point. I don't think I've ever met anyone who doesn't. But for people who have never played Penumbra, it was the...
Or if you have Amnesia.
Or if you have Amnesia. Yes, good one, friend. But yeah, for those people who have never heard of Penumbra, it was... I think they released it about 5 years before Amnesia. It's the same kind of thing. It's very slow-paced, puzzle-based horror. You kind of slowly walk through a level. Very story-heavy, written through notes and things like that. And it's a really hard game to go back, revisit, and write things about. Because I think it's really good. But for me, it's just so tedious. Because I think they make game worlds really well, Frictional. But their actual games are so bland when you don't have PewDiePie just screaming at the screen because he's scared of what's going on. That there's no fun in doing it yourself. And revisiting
I feel like those games kind of maybe have aged not terribly well. Because there was a point in time where those kind of horror games were like all the rage and everyone was going crazy for them. And now I feel like we've got to the point where we've nailed that kind of atmosphere, but we're adding more in terms of mechanics. So like the new Resident Evil 7, where it's in that first person sort of look and you've got that kind of atmosphere going. I think, you know, maybe we've gone past the point where, I mean, they're probably still great games, but we've gone past the point where I feel like you're missing out if you've not played them, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that the way it's built is based on their limitations at the time. Like they couldn't throw in the big budget enemy AI like Capcom can for Resident Evil, and they did the best with that. But I think it showed at the time, because even at the time when I played it, I was like, "This is boring. Like this is just a dog, and it's just rotating like 180 degrees with no turning animation." And you're like, "That is the scariest thing it does. There is nothing else scary about this dog." You know, and then
it's pretty scary that a dog that can't turn is turning.
Well, it's turning like a boat.
That's scary. If you saw a dog turning like a boat in front of you, you can't tell me you wouldn't be scared.
I think it depends on the location of the dog. If it was in the sea and it was turning like a boat, I would assume it was doing the correct thing. However, if it was in the middle of like Leicester Square, yeah. No. But no, yeah. So also one of the mobs in Penumbra, I don't remember this from when it was first popular, but apparently one of the mobs is just a giant earthworm, and it really threw me off guard when it came barreling through a cave. I was like, that's just a worm. That is just a worm. And then I looked it up and it is just a worm. And I was like, why did they put that in?
I think going back to kind of what you were saying about how they haven't aged well, because I know the game you're talking of, because I've played it as well. If you were to look at it now, I feel like your initial reaction would be, this is a student project, isn't it? Whereas back when we played it, when it first came out, like, I mean, I was in college when I first played it. It was like, oh man, this is the peak of like indie horror. Like, oh my God, like it was amazing. But now it's like, it's a little bit objective, I know, but looking at it and going visually, it looks like a student project, even though it's not.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think as well, their puzzle gameplay is brilliant throughout the whole series, and into Amnesia as well, and into Soma. I think they did Soma too. It's almost like as they've made more games, they've figured out what they should be putting between those puzzles, rather than going, we put some puzzles in and little bits in between. Whereas now it feels like they've, from Penumbra up until Soma, they began to build proper games rather than little segments that they force into a full game, so to speak.
Here's a room with a puzzle. Here's another room with a puzzle. Right, but how do we get in between those two rooms with puzzles?
Let's take away the light and make a dog turn around really slowly.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah, and then obviously there was Hydrophobia Prophecy, which, when I played it many years ago, was awful. Decided to revisit because I felt bad that I'd only played it for 9 minutes when I first bought it. After about 9 minutes of playing it again, realized why I only played it for 9 minutes. And then for the good people of Game Grin, I decided that I would churn my way through the 3 hours it took me to finish it. And I don't think it would be over the top to say that this is one of the worst games I've ever played. Okay. And it's just, they built their entire game engine. The engine is called the Hydro Engine. So clearly these people are obsessed with water. And they built this entire engine just around water physics and just forgot every other element of the game. So the water appears and you're like, oh my God, they made this in 2011. This is incredible. And then they do other things and you think, oh my God, they made this in 2011. How did they do that? Why have they done this? And I can't grasp how bad it is. And the worst thing about it is the water levels or the water itself. The whole idea was you're meant to be able to manipulate it and you get that power just before the final boss battle. So everything they built, their game and their engine on, you got for all of 10 minutes.
This to make you want Hydrophobia 2.
Well, there was meant to be a Hydrophobia 2, but apparently the first one wasn't successful, and I don't know why.
Couldn't tell you. No idea.
So any other games?
No, that's really all I've been playing, finishing through those two. Whale of a time.
Fantastic. Myself, The Simpsons tapped out. I've gone all the way through the wrestling event, which ends tomorrow, so just in time. Star Trek Online, I'm still plugging away at the latest event to get a ship. Got to fight this space battle or ground battle on a planet from Star Trek Discovery 14 times before the 28th, and you can only do it one a day, so you have to play it for 2 weeks. Noita, nothing as interesting as what happened to me last week happened, where I got obliterated by space laser. Dauntless, I'm about halfway through the Hunt Pass, working my way slowly through that. I played Jump Force for first time.
You poor soul.
I regret playing Jump Force.
That sounds like everybody who ever bought Jump Force was like, Jump Force, this will be cool. Oh.
I mean, Jump Stars and J Stars plus whatever it was, those were pretty fun. But this was...
J Stars just, of Victory Versus.
That's the one. Jump Force is just boring. Long cutscenes and awful fighting.
Favorite thing about Jump Force is how none of the characters have like any animation at all in cutscenes. They're all just sort of standing around looking at each other.
That's very true.
Blank expressions. It's incredible. You get all these very famous anime characters in a room, and the best thing that you decide to do with them is just sort of pose them like they're action figures. It's not great.
Well, when you've got all these licenses, you've got to appease everyone. So, oh, why does Naruto jump up at that instant and Goku doesn't? Because Goku would jump up at that instant. Just have them all standing. Anyway, don't play Jump Force, people. I started Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Black Arrow, a Xbox exclusive game, playing it backwards compatible on the Xbox 360. No, you cannot play it on the Xbox One. I expect it to feel more like Rainbow Six 3 on the it did on the GameCube, but it does feel like a sequel. It's hard to explain. But I'm playing it for diaries, so you can read those when I eventually put those up on the sites. I'm having to use my phone to take screenshots of the TV because obviously you can't emulate the Xbox or the Xbox 360. So I had to buy a physical copy, and the Xbox 360 does not take screenshots. But that's my problem. I've found a way around it. I have a little tripod that I put my phone in and just have it aimed at the screen the whole time.
Reminiscent of like 13-year-old me trying to make a YouTube channel.
I mean, you mentioned that. I actually just saw a BuzzFeed video today where they had done the exact thing that you're saying, only they were recording themselves play Animal Crossing off their phone, recording the screen. They're two phones, one recording themselves, one recording the screen. And that was the BuzzFeed video of Animal Crossing. I was like, oh.
I mean, my excuse for not buying a capture card is this is the only game, the only reason I would use it for this one game. I have no interest in recording the Switch or any of the other consoles. But if you're doing a video for BuzzFeed,
it gets very tricky for different.
Yeah.
I guess it gets tricky for different consoles as well sometimes. I don't know whether even you can plug in an Elgato to an Xbox 360 if you need a specific model of Elgato or whatever.
It's HDMI, so.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's the PS3 that's the only one. The book is like off topic, but yeah, I think PS3 is the only one you have to do some fancy trickery with it to get to work with an Elgato, at least with the newer one.
Yeah, it's got a HDMI lock thing, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wasn't aware of that. Good thing I didn't drop any money on that then. the cheapest ones are like £40, and I'm not entirely sure that they'd be suitable for use. And there's a lockdown. I'm not going through all that. Anyway. Persona 5, I'm almost at the end of that, I think. I had two sections where I couldn't save for an hour and a half because of fight, cutscene, cutscene, fight, cutscene, cutscene.
Wow.
I'd like to save regularly because I'm super paranoid about power cuts. So this had me on the edge of the seat on multiple occasions.
For the wrong reason. Or for the right reason.
And then at one point I came across a random enemy that was shaped like a penis, and it put me right back on my seat.
Yeah, Mara. I know of Mara. Yeah.
I'm fast approaching the end of that. I'm about 120 hours-ish, I think.
I'm going to ask you, is this the original game, or is this the Royal...
This is the original. I've been playing it now and then for since it came out, and
oh wow, okay.
And just this past couple of weeks, been putting a lot of time into it, and yeah, 3 hours where I couldn't save. Oh. Anyway,
so just to incite debate here, who's best girl?
Makoto.
Makoto. Okay, fair enough. No, I just want to incite debate and an argument in the comments section. That's all.
No, I've seen people complaining online. Makoto's a Mary Sue, and you're supposed to go with her. Why don't you go with someone else? It's like, but Anne is the lover confidant.
Mm.
I mean, clearly she is the one you're quote unquote supposed to go with.
I would suppose so. Yeah, I would guess that Anne would be the bait. Like, they usually do kind of do that with the Persona games. So like in 3, it's Yukari. In 4, it's Risa, I think, is the lovers. So yeah, I don't think you usually are meant to just go with the lovers. I don't know. It's up to you, though. It's your choice.
Here's a hot take. If your best girl is Futaba, I'd just like to ruin that by reminding you that for most of the game, she is technically underage.
I mean, yeah. The thing is, she's 15, no. And Joker is 16. if your best girl, however, is Kawakami, your teacher, that is a bit weird.
Yeah, there's several adults you can romance, and of course the one who's younger than you. But a game where you can't romance people is something else I've been playing this week, Viscera Cleanup Detail. That was a game night that we had. If you're interested in doing one of these game nights, you can join our Discord server. You can find the link on our website. And at the moment, they're playing GTFO. They've been playing World War Z, whichever, a lot regularly. yeah, lots of stuff going on. Two more that I've been playing, A Bright Memory, which we'll talk about more shortly, I assume. I got stuck at one point and just all F4'd it because this one enemy just kept killing me. It's a really well put made game. It's fun until I got to this one point and it was like, you son. And the last game that I've been playing is Ember. There's a free demo on Steam, and you are a freelance firefighter. You get told, go here, so you go there and then try to save as many people and possessions as possible. And also, you can steal the possessions.
What?
Yeah.
That just sounds like a criminal to me, under the guise of a firefighter.
So you're carrying this TV out, and you can either take it, TVs, lamps, plants, this sort of thing, and you can either take it to where you're throwing all the survivors of this house fire, or you can go and put it on the back of your car.
Don't mind me. I'm not taking your television. It's fine. This is just payment for saving your life.
I mean, they might tip you, or you might get $100 for stealing a TV.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
That's one of the really nice touches. I'm really been enjoying Ember. Looking forward to it coming out on Early Access next week.
Sounds like a lot of fun, I think.
We're going to be streaming a bit of it on Thursday on the Gabe Green Twitch channel. So make sure you tune in for that. Plug. Speaking of tuning in, we'll start off with what Codemasters showed off at Inside Xbox, Dirt 5. There is going to be Codemasters' first next-generation title coming to Xbox 4, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Steam, and of course PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X, and, you know, Stadia.
Yeah, the Stadia that exists, right?
But they're still releasing games on it. Yeah. It's boasting 120 frames per second support for player split screen, a career mode featuring Nolan North and Troy Baker.
I saw that. It's like as if they aren't in every other game anyway. So it's like a specific advertising feature. Hey, look, we've got these two voice actors who are in every other game.
Yes, good. It's not like a couple of games that recently boasted that David Hayter is going to be voicing characters in their games. That's a get. Nolan North and Troy Baker.
It is a get.
Yes. Yeah, okay. It's a video game, of course.
David Hayter, of course, the celebrated screenwriter of X2, X-Men United.
And also the legendary voice actor of Solid Snake, Naked Snake, and Old Snake. Thank you very much. And soon to be the voice of General Nikolai Zhirov in Covert Phantom Ops. Phantom Covert Ops. Wow, I can't even pronounce the title of the game I'm working on.
Yeah, fair enough.
I give you one opportunity to plug your game and...
Yeah, I let the team down.
Right, well, Dirt 5, is anyone going to be checking that out? A racing fan amongst us?
It's very possible, because I feel like I've not played a good racing game in a very long time. I kind of peaked on Gran Turismo, and when that died, my love for racing games died with it. But I did play a lot of Dirt 3. I didn't really do Dirt 4, but Dirt 3 I played a lot of, because it has an unnecessarily deep story mode that I feel like games shouldn't have, but they do. So...
There is always I'm kind of out of the loop here. Is what's the story mode? Is it like you are a person and now you need to drive?
You are a racer and you need to drive.
Oh, that's good.
Not just
I'm in it. I'm in the role play now. I'm a racer.
With that being said, I will invest money very quickly if they get Troy Baker and Nolan North to do the entire story of Uncharted 4 in Dirt 5.
Something that our boss mentioned, well, brought up the other day, is you can get Dirt Rally on Steam. You can get Dirt Rally, Dirt Rally 2.0, Dirt from last year, Dirt 4, but you can't get Dirt 3. And of course, you'll soon be able to get Dirt 5. Why can't you get Dirt 3?
I don't know. I feel like, I've got Dirt 3 on Steam. Is it just not on there anymore?
He wasn't able to find it, and while we've been talking, I've had a quick look and haven't been able to find it.
I don't know.
So
the store place just takes you to the main store.
How strange. Well, I know someone in Codemasters. I can ask them, or say, "Hey, listen to the latest episode of the Greencast."
Is where we talk about Dirt 3 for a bit.
Well, speaking of things we're talking about, Inside Xbox was this past week, which showed off a lot of quote-unquote gameplay footage from the Xbox Series X, including, of course, Dirt 5 and the aforementioned Bright Memory Infinite, the full version, because it turns out that Bright Memory in Early Access is basically a demo, but if you bought it, then you will be getting Bright Memory Infinite for free. So I'm entirely happy with that.
I just want to point out that, like, out of all the trailers that were shown, because something that came out of, like, the
gameplay trailers.
Yeah, something that came out of it was a lot of people would be on Twitter were all like, "Oh, it's not that graphically impressive. I thought Next Gen was meant to be great." That's my voice for you. Not you, but you. And
hey.
I don't know what you're talking about. It sounds just like me.
And obviously, like, I think a lot of people, like, Xbox admitted they hyped up the event wrong, but, like, a lot of people kind of forgot that, yes, we were seeing Xbox Series X games, but these are the games that are going to release on the current gen and next gen. But out of all the trailers we got shown, I genuinely believe that the Bright Memory trailer was the most visually, like, holy crap, that looks awesome. And Bright Memory is already a really good-looking game, even, like, an early access little demo. So out of all the games we saw, that was the one that I was most like, yes, yes, I want this. I already want
it. It's definitely attractive. It's really pretty game. Is it? I was wondering, because I didn't know it existed already as a thing, how different, how big is the step up from Bright Memory to Bright Memory Infinite in what we've shown? And is what they've shown in Bright Memory Infinite a good example of what the gameplay in Bright Memory is like? Because I didn't know that Bright Memory already existed.
From what I've played in Bright Memory, it has none of the driving segments, and you're fighting mainly ghost, demon, shadow things. You do fight a few troops, but it's the bit where she gets the shotgun, fights the guy with the shield. It's mostly that sort of thing.
Okay, so it is actually quite representative. The first bit that you see where they sort of pops out of the water and then does a bit of free running and bullet storm whip stuff, that's quite representative of the original.
The grappling hooks in there, launching the enemy into the air, using the sword, the basics are there. The wall running was not. Again, the driving's not, but yeah.
That's actually very interesting. Because that was one, I watched it with a few friends, and we sort of, I mean, obviously it is the one that sort of looks out, as Nikki says, as being genuinely quite pretty. Like, the rest of them are kind of whatever, but this one you're like, oh wow, that's actually a very, like, good-looking game. But we were very sort of questionable about whether or not it was, because they said it was gameplay. We were sort of like, is that representative of being in-game or not? I don't know.
Yes, definitely.
But yeah, that is very interesting that it is. Could be a very good game.
And we think it's pretty even without seeing the alternate costumes, such as the schoolgirl outfit that you can unlock.
I'm not surprised.
It's a first-person shooter, so you can't exactly see anything, but when you're in the menu before you load into your game, you can choose certain outfits if you can't choose an outfit before you start playing for the first time, but after you've played, after I had played and come out and done something, come back to it the next day, had a choice of outfits. I was like, oh, that's strange.
So what you're saying is I can't change the outfit of the weird samurai demon shield people.
But you can put her in a miniskirt, yes.
Sold. Wait. Speaking of other visually pleasing games that were announced, this is a cop-out. I know it is, because literally you all knew I was going to pick this one. Scarlet Nexus, Bandai Namco's new anime game. I was watching the Xbox thing with a lot of, like, it was airing whilst I was still at work, so I was on Slack with a lot of colleagues. As soon as this game came on, everyone was like, oh, here goes Nikki, there's Nikki's favorite. I was like, yes, anime! It basically looks like they saw Astral Chain and went, what if we do Astral Chain but edgier? And I'm just like, yes, this is fine. So yeah, next generation is looking fantastic. We've got first person, Devil May Cry, bang bang slash slash, and then we've got more anime. I'm happy.
I mean, the top comment on the Scarlet Nexus trailer is, Bandai were like, what if we made Astral Chain but they were walking flowers?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
I also want to call out Second Extinction, which is an interesting one because although it's the Avalanche Studios being that are publishing it, the team that are making Second Extinction, that's the one that's basically a three-person co-op
dinosaurs. Dead
style. Yeah, you shoot dinosaurs, take back the Earth from those pesky dinosaurs. They're the team that made Generation Zeroes. Now, Generation Zeroes was the other week free on Steam to play for a while. And I played Generation Zeroes for a good couple of hours with a friend. It's not the greatest thing. A lot of potential. But it's
wasn't
like...
Wasn't it one of the contenders for most disappointing game during our Game of the Year podcast?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, no.
So, fingers crossed, Second Extinction builds on that. I've already signed up for the beta. But yeah, I'm a little bit like, okay, let's see how that goes.
I just say about Scarlet Nexus, because we was talking about it a little bit. I also, similar to you, my friends just sort of immediately like, oh, look, here's Adam's games now. We can shut up. But you could hear a little bit of the soundtrack with it whilst it was being played. Obviously, there is gameplay in that trailer as well. Soundtrack sounded amazing, but one of the things that I saw come out after, I think it was only a few hours after that, was that part of the team working on Scarlet Nexus worked on Tales of Vesperia, the Xbox 360 sort of exclusive JRPG that recently came out, I think last year, on other consoles in a sort of re-release. That game is really good, and so knowing that part of the team that made that game is now working on Scarlet Nexus has me all the more excited for Scarlet Nexus, thinking, you know, okay, this could be like a genuinely very good game. So yeah, genuinely interested and excited about that, where it's going, don't know, but hopefully it'll be pretty great.
I find it hard to get excited when a member of the team from X game is working on this game. It's like very recent.
It's like one of the higher producers of Tales of Vesperia.
Yeah, yesterday I had a email about a new game that's got the two people who are working on it used to work at Pixar.
Ooh.
And it's a shoot 'em up, you know, in a spaceship going along, lots of shooting.
I mean, slightly different. It's like, these people who made Toy Story are now making a shooting game in space. Okay, cool. These people who made this good JRPG are now making another good JRPG.
To be fair, it's like, a shooting game in space is definitely the next logical step for Buzz Lightyear.
Also, yeah, on fair that, enough.
I just hope there are aliens there that go, ooh.
On that, I'm bringing it back to Xbox. The second this one of the trailers played, myself and many others got very excited because of the music immediately resonated with us. And that's the trailer for Medium, which was revealed to have the composer for the original Silent Hill soundtrack.
Yes.
Sold on that alone.
Also looks like a very interesting
sort of story as well. Like the when we sort of went into the opening trailer, there was a woman sort of with a child. She was clearly like heavily pregnant, and then it sort of looked to all go to hell, and now she's like worlds are falling apart around her and stuff like that. It looks like it could be a very interesting psychological sort of thriller game. I know in the same vein as sort of Silent Hill and that sort of stuff. So the fact that they've got Akira Yamaoka, I think it's Akira Yamaoka, is it? I genuinely, like, that was the game where I stood to attention. I thought, you know what? Survival horror is not massively my thing, but this looks super interesting. It's definitely one to keep your eye on, I think.
Yeah, apparently it's so the main character, who's the woman we see in the trailer, apparently she is a medium, hence the name. And you'll be exploring environments both from the real world and the spirit world. And the pitch that the team have gone for is that apparently you can switch between them like seamlessly. Think of it, if you will, a la like the time travel segment in for Titanfall 2. And so something similar to that, I think, is what they're going for. But it should be quite interesting. Other than that, the only other title that really stood out, well, the other two titles that stood out really to me, Accuser Like a Dragon, finally getting a Western release, win.
Yes.
And The Ascent, because The Ascent is looked like a twin stick shooter with a cyberpunk setting, and that's the only thing it could have been more to make me instantly buy it is if it was a twin stick shooter, dungeon crawler, cyberpunk, in which case, yes. Fun fact, if you're making a dungeon crawler, I love you.
The trailer for Yakuza really threw me off watching an Xbox event, and suddenly there's a Yakuza game and it's turn-based, and you just sat there like, everything I know about video games is wrong now, because
you're just like, lobsters? What?
Yeah, I think the first Yakuza game, I must have been about 13 when it came out on the PS2, and it's like a beat 'em up, and now I'm 26 and it's on the Xbox and it's turn-based, and if you told me that 10 years ago, I think I would have just punched you in the face.
I mean, Yakuza 2 was on the Wii U.
Was it really?
Yakuza 1 and 2. They remade both of them on the Wii U. And it was only released in Japan, unfortunately.
Was it called Wii Yakuza?
I think it was just Yakuza 1 and 2 remake or something. But
branding has failed.
The advert was amazing, though. The advert I remember seeing is that this guy is like... he's like an office worker. Comes home and he's playing Yakuza, and his wife is sort of in the room and she's like, oh, I don't approve of that Yakuza. And then she leaves, and then he goes to like the hostess club, and then she comes back in and he's there at the hostess club going, ooh, Yakuza. And I think he's like currently sleeping on the sofa for the night.
Wow.
Speaking of sleeping, it seems that a certain franchise is no longer sleeping with the fishes, because the Mafia game Twitter account, the official account for the Mafia game franchise, tweeted the word family at exactly 3 p.m. on the 10th of May. The account has made no tweets since 2016, so it's obviously had people in a flutter, wanting to know if they're remaking something, if they're making something new.
I think it's I don't think it's crazy to think that they're working on a new Mafia game. And Mafia 3 was released in 2016. I checked before. So it's not absolutely mental to assume that they're making a Mafia 4, like, and they're announcing it 4 years later.
That Mafia 3 game was so mixed, though, in how well it did some things and how poorly it did other things. Like the story and the way it tells its story is amazing, and I would love to see them give another game a crack in that style, but the open world was so bland that it pretty much just put so many people off the franchise who'd never tried it before.
We gave it a 6.5 on Game Grin.
It's not bad.
Also, just a note as well, that since then on the 11th they tweeted the word power. And 5 hours ago at the time of recording, they tweeted the word respect. So family, power, respect. It is worth noting that obviously because the Summer Game Fest is going on, there are announcements happening kind of every other day at the minute. Side note, apparently, according to Jeff Keighley, the most important announcement of the summer is tomorrow. Probably not Mafia, but you know, we could
no, it's probably
a
Mafia not.
Announcement at any point, be it a remaster collection or a new one.
What would be the most important one? What would be the most important announcement?
It's just him announcing he's giving Hideo Kojima another award.
I think the second game is the most critically acclaimed, isn't it?
For Mafia 2, definitely. Yeah. It's the one everyone goes on about. I mean, the first one was all right. I just think it's one of them. It's much like Assassin's Creed, the original Assassin's Creed, where you kind of see the good ideas. It doesn't quite fulfill it. And then the second one just sort of nails what they were going for. So I think it definitely that could be the reason. But the second one wasn't on Steam for like a really long time, was it? Because of the licensing for the music. So they've only just brought that back into the forefront. So it'd be interesting if they're actually remaking that now, that they've only just managed to get it back on store windows.
Well, something else interesting that'll lead into our main topic. Ubisoft have announced the Ubisoft Forward, a fully digital showcase with exclusive games, news, reveals, and more on the 12th of July. It appears that gaming conventions are dead. Long live online gaming conventions.
Yeah.
With E3 and the like cancelling, understandably, it's allowing companies to spread out their own announcements and give themselves a bit of space. So my question to you all is, are you more or less likely to attend these separate events than you would have one of the bigger ones?
So I think the main thing for me is that, like, by having it as set like separate events, maybe we'll see like two in the same day, who knows. But if we go with the argument's sake of like it's one per day, a couple of days gap in between, which is what it's looking like at the minute, it makes it so much more manageable to follow, one, the announcements, two, for people to curate the actual news they want to reveal. And they're at more manageable times. No staying up till 4 a.m. to catch what could potentially be a really disappointing presentation from a big publisher who have to cram 50 things into, like, you know, an hour. For example, the Ubisoft one we're going to have coming up, will, I'm sure, show us plenty of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which will make up for the rather abysmal gameplay, not gameplay trailer that we saw during the Xbox briefing. Likewise, there's an 18-minute presentation coming up in a couple of days, if not tomorrow, to show off the new Ghosts of Tsushima. Fuck, I can never pronounce it. PlayStation game.
Tsushima.
Yeah, and even today, we had the announcement of the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 remaster, which was great. It was a trailer and then a 15-20-minute interview. It gives you everything you need to know in a nice little bite-sized chunk. They're not having to cram everything into a 40-second trailer. They can get everything kind of nicely paced out. And I think for people that really want to enjoy the announcements and are looking forward to all this stuff, like, that's a better thing for them. You know, I might just watch the trailer for Valhalla and be like, that's nice. But you might then sit there for the whole hour and love every single moment of all the interviews and all the breakdowns. You know, it's just something for everyone. And I think it's more manageable.
I think as well, when you're doing it this way and everything isn't just coming out gung-ho and firing its way out, you can find things easier. Like, if you, let's say you release something that looks interesting, but it comes out the same day as 8 or 9 other good ideas, suddenly it's not even going to make the top page of a Reddit thread. Like, it's just going to go completely under the radar. But if you release your interesting idea today, not much going on, suddenly everyone is taking notice because they haven't got the next big thing around the corner taking their eye away.
Yeah. I agree, but I think the question is, would you be more likely or less likely to sort of attend? Not that I was attending anything anyway, but I was always, I think it's been like every year since I knew E3 was a thing, that I sat there and watched like all of E3, or as much as possible. Some of the shows, like the PC gaming show, I tended to skip or whatever, because it was almost always boring apart from like the last year. But I would always, always watch them, even for companies that I don't like. Famously, me and my friend have watched it. I think we watched an Xbox conference, and we didn't know a single game. We were like, oh, okay, that's Halo. Now here's something else. Here's a car that flew in from the sky. Wonderful. Whereas normally I would just watch whatever, you know, like now I feel like I don't have to just watch all of them. Now I should just watch like one or just whatever it is that I'm interested in. So if Square Enix does a thing, then maybe I'll watch all of that. But Ubisoft, I don't know if I will. Whereas before I could sit there for an hour and a half and watch all of Ubisoft's and be there with a friend going, oh, this is boring. You know?
I think you're right. It does depend on whose conference, I guess, who's doing it. Like, if for me, since the Switch came out, let's say, Nintendo tend to just announce their little directs, and you feel like you have to be there because they always just seem to throw something big in there randomly. And they feel like you're unmissable. You don't want to be there. You don't want to miss out when they release that big thing and everyone else is talking about it, and you miss the big reveal, and you feel a bit like sucky about it.
I would not normally watch an EA press conference. But because it was E3,
no, they have nothing that I'm interested in either.
Yeah, but because it's E3, I would sit there and watch it with my friends, even though they were kind of outside of E3 a little bit, with the EA Play stuff. But I very much remember sitting there and watching Pelé talk about FIFA for 2 hours on stage and being incredibly bored, and loving every minute of it, and going, "Why is Pelé still talking? Pelé, shut up."
That is
LA, I love you, but shut up.
Not an EA one necessarily, but Ubisoft and their just ability to always put on the most cringe-worthy performances
every single
year.
Just Dance happens.
Yeah,
and they're like, "We're not going to get a Just Dance."
It's like we need to have people doing the most ridiculous dances right now. This is going to get people in. And I'm just sat there like, this game is like FIFA. The people who like Just Dance are going to buy this game, whether it's got the best songs or the worst songs. You don't need to go for this like 20-minute video of a man in a teddy bear costume dancing in the middle of the stage.
You realize that the next Just Dance reveal is going to be a Zoom call, just recording people, like 20 people dancing.
Yeah, it probably will be. I kind of live for that kind of awful shit that happens at E3. Like, that's the best bit.
Yeah, like
it's just being snarky and like
those like horrible moments just go stupidly wrong, and you can just sit there and live on them forever. Like the PS3 one with the giant enemy crabs. I think that was the first time I ever watched E3, and I've just never forgotten that moment.
This game is all about realism. Comes in giant enemy crabs.
I think the live performances will be missed if we don't get them back, because I think those big reveals, like I remember, I think it was 2015, the Sony one where they did Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah,
they had like a little Shenmue. Yeah, exactly, and they had like a little quiet bit, and then straight into Shenmue. And it's like I feel like that just without that audience reaction, where they all go nuts for them both.
Yeah.
It won't be the same. Of course, you'll still be excited. It won't kill your buzz for it. But like seeing like a room full of people just be overjoyed with how this game that you're really excited for has made them so excited as well. That's a great feeling, and that is something that will be lost.
It's partially why I like watching the I don't know if you know the Nintendo building in New York. They do live stream events of the Nintendo Directs, and so I always enjoy watching them happen. Because there's like a massive audience of just people standing in a shop watching a screen, and then a Smash character will be announced, and everyone in the shop will go suddenly mental. Oh, it's wonderful. It's that sort of electricity and community that I think makes E3 really special, and it will be genuinely sad if it is to be done with.
Yeah, definitely. I think I don't know if E3 will be back, but I think something would take its place if it wasn't. I just can't see. I feel like there's a market for just a big convention where people show games off and people pay obscene amount of money to go and look at those games when they could just use Twitch.
And on that, we've reached the end of our podcast. Thank you for joining me, Nikki, Rhodes, and Velt. And thank you for listening, and an even bigger thank you for subscribing, whether that's via Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or our RSS feed. You can leave a review on iTunes, follow us on Spotify, or post a cheeky comment on GameGrin.com. Don't forget to also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch too. And while you're at it, game on.